So thank you very much for the invitation. It's really wonderful to be back here and in such a wonderful room. I'd first like to apologise. I have a bit of a cough, so that might be a little bit annoying in between, but so I'm asking for your patience today. So what I'm going to talk to you about today is how essential our infrastructure is, and that we think about how we sustain that infrastructure, because that really supports it, all what we do with open access and open science, the projects that we undertake, the policy that we're implementing, the services that we're developing or we rely on. So this infrastructure is essential, and we shouldn't take it for granted that it will be there in 2 or 3 years from now if we don't collectively as a community think about how to fund that, unless we're just going to leave it to the very large commercial companies to buy up some of those essential services, and I don't want to see that. So I'm going to talk to you. I hope you're going to be convinced by me by the end of my talk that we need a different approach, and this has already started, but so this topic is really dear to me, and I hope you feel the same. I am going to tell you something very briefly about Spark Europe, because some of you may not know about the work that we do, but most of it will be about sustaining infrastructure. So, as Tiberius just said, what we're really working towards is to make open the default, so open access, research data, and open education. And if we look at this rich, healthy field of vegetables, if we think about all the open access material that we are making available, or the research data available, those are the fruits that you see here. But without a healthy, stable soil, which has good nutrients, which is watered, which is which has not too many weeds, as you see over there, is looked after and tended, we will not be able to fully use the potential of that soil and to grow and reap the benefits of open access and open science. So I'm really focusing on the soil here, really looking after the basis on which our work is based. So what does Spark Europe do in a nutshell? We are particularly focused on driving policy development on a high European level. So we are lobbying for an open science-friendly copyright reform, which is quite hard work right now. Some of you may know also for the Public Sector Information Directive, which is really important to make research data, publicly funded research data, more available. And also for the next framework program, make sure that the mandate is strong and that it's not weakened by the anti-open access or open science parliamentarians who are trying to weaken it right now. we are also, next week, we are starting research to look at national funders, foundations, charities, funding agencies in Europe to see what open access and open science policies do they have and what rewards and incentive structures do they have to make open access and open science available, because they are really key in this, because of course money talks. So if the funder says and insists that you make your material open, so we want to share some of those good practices to encourage more funders to have stronger open access and open science policies. So that's something else we do. And we also do some policy reporting. We have a policy watch on research data, for example, in Europe. And we also provide advocacy guidance and tools, and you can ask me about those in the break, because I don't want this just to be about what we're doing, but about one particular topic. What's also really close to my heart is, if we're thinking about cultural change, it's also how do you encourage a strong relationship between your researchers and the library and work together to move this forward? And I don't mean just holding workshops, but really engaging and helping get some of your researchers to advocate for you peer-to-peer, right? So that I'm also really interested in doing more work on that area and raising good practices. And last but not least, what's a really important topic for us is how can we better sustain an open infrastructure? And that's why I'm here today. Something briefly, I know Plan S is on everybody's lips right now in Europe. What we did is we submitted some implementation guidance to make things more specific for the implementation plan of Plan S. We also published this 10 ways that libraries can support the implementation of it. So that's also some of our policy work, and that will feed into the implementation plan, which will be published for public consultation at the end of this month. So everybody will be able to give their opinions on Plan S. Right. So, to my talk about infrastructure. So we have done really well, I think, in Europe at establishing some really strong policies. I know it's not always possible in all countries, but on a high level, you've got the Competitiveness Council, where all of Europe's industry and research ministers committed to making open access open access to their research material open by 2020. There are various national policies that have been developed, many institutional ones. I counted, last count was about almost 600. And then you've got funder policies, which I've already mentioned, which are increasing. And then, of course, things like Plan S and Coalition S and Horizon Europe. But with that, so the more policy we have, the more dependent we are on a stable infrastructure to implement that, which also brings additional costs. We also know that a lot of the time the policy that's implemented doesn't come with a nice new extra package of money to implement, right? We do need to change that and have those conversations with funders increasingly, but here I'm going to talk about the infrastructure. So we've also done a lot in project work, many of us, so short-term funding, developing many services to support scholarly communications. I think many of you probably know the work from Utrecht University, where they mapped out, it's called the 101 on innovation tools in various research workflow phases, where you see, and you will identify a number of logos here and services that have either been developed by the library community or by the research community. And some of those have been bought up by large commercial companies, and some of them are still independent. Okay, so we've done a lot to support the work we do. But can we say that all of this, or all of the valuable ones, the really valuable ones, will be there 5 years from now, 3 years from now, 2 years from now? Yes? Maybe we take it for granted that they will be, but I think perhaps not necessarily so. And so, with my third bullet there, as we all know, there are the situations where valuable services, maybe the business models that they have in place, so they've gone through the project funding phase, they've existed for a couple of years or so, but they're struggling financially, and then an Elsevier knocks on the door and says, oh, we can help you, and so they're bought up. And then if we think about the values that maybe some of the larger commercial companies in particular have, where profit is number one, that opposes the values that we have as research institutions and libraries. And it's really important that we make sure that some of these essential infrastructures remain independent and that we can influence their direction in the future. Okay, so how do we do that? So something that's really important then in this conversation is that there is a European regulatory body, and the European Commission is actually looking at that to prevent this unfair competition. So that's working behind the scenes, but what can we do as a community? Well, firstly, before I tell you what, I have four signposts. So what's really important is that we have a fair, stable, and sustainable scholarly communication infrastructure with no more imbalanced commercial exploitation of science through open access, There is no longer a place for monopolies to call the shots on us. So libraries and the research community, they must take more control over our scholarly communications and that infrastructure. So how do we as a community ensure that we have that infrastructure in years to come to support the implementation of our work in this area? Excuse me. So first, changing our thinking and our, not just our thinking, our actions. Just like at home, we have our budget for the electricity, for gas, for our mobile phones, etc. Many libraries are, of course, or most of that budget goes towards subscription costs. But I think it's really important in future to think about if we are really moving and supporting open access and open science, we also need to have a fund to support us with this in the future, not only our own personal work, but the work of others that supports our work. So we need to think about having a jar here for open infrastructure. I would love to see that as you have your subscription budgets and your staff costs and other costs, that you think about open infrastructure. It may be filled not very high with not very many coins, but if you have that post and you dedicate something towards that, that will help contribute to sustain it. So, and what else we can do is support a range of services and infrastructure that are exploring different business models that are very much focused on community funding, collective funding. So, for example, I think many of you will know the Open Library of Humanities that unlocks a number of journals in the humanities where libraries pay in. You've also got Knowledge Unlatched. Similarly, libraries become members, contribute money to unlock journals, books, but they're also exploring how to sustain certain services as well, so as a community. So think about perhaps contributing to some of these initiatives, so that will help. You've also got Archive, that's been around for a very long time, as you know. That's a very interesting model because they have institutional funding to support Archive, but they also have a membership fee where members contribute for 5 years a certain amount of money, and then that's matched by another funder. So that's a very interesting mixed model. There's less risk. So either you help contribute and become members to some of these, or you have your own service and you think about exploring and implementing some of these models to help you spread the burden of the costs of your service or infrastructure. What you can also do is get involved perhaps in some of these initiatives. There's been quite a boom this year in investing in open infrastructure and looking into that. And here are some of the things that are under development. So Spark North America, for example, I think they're going to publish something this week, but they've been looking at the publisher diversification, what kinds of services or terrains are they working on. So for example, Elsevier as a data company, and what services are they providing? And looking at that, at what would that mean if large commercial companies have a big hold on a certain sector that's important for us. So they're looking at that, what might the consequences be on the larger research community, for example. The 2.5% approach, who's heard of that? Anybody? Couple, not so many, okay. It is new, I said, after all. or they're called now Invest in Open. So this was actually born by a dean of university library in the US, where he said, should we not as libraries think about investing a certain amount of money of our budgets on open access and open science? And so there was a conversation, don't worry about 2.5%, it was just a symbolic number, but it's thinking about, should we top slice some of our budgets to invest there? So that conversation is ongoing, and they're also, yeah, let me show you. So they are looking at what kind of infrastructure ecosystem is there. So what are we talking about if we're thinking about investing in infrastructure? So who might that include? And they're also looking at estimating then the costs of open infrastructure too, and monitoring the library spend to have a more decent conversation about this. So they're gathering this data in the US right now. So that's quite interesting. An interesting development. How about JROST? Anybody heard about that new initiative? No. Okay, I'm glad I can offer something new today. Okay, I've got some fans here. So JROST is really interesting to watch out for. This is a group that's bringing a lot of essential tools and services together. We met in the United States this year in the spring. So I think some of these are well known to you. And it's getting them together to look at, can we create a roadmap together? So more efficiently working together towards open. Also looking at what business models do you have? How can we strengthen those organizations to make sure that they're going to be there in a few years' time? So that's great to bring these international initiatives together, to have that conversation and to see how we can strengthen that ecosystem as a whole. Built upon that, we're also part of a new group called Invest in Open Infrastructure. So that's Spark North America, Spark Europe, the 2.5% group called Towards a Scholarly Commons, the JROST, the Open Research Funders Group, and operas. How about operas? Anyone involved in operas? Neither so many. This is really worth looking at, operas. This is European. It's based on a couple of EU projects which have just closed. And this is looking at the social sciences and humanities and at the whole ecosystem. So it's looking at open access publishers. It's looking at building shared services together. Discovery systems, certification systems, etc. And it's looking at how do we sustain the whole system. So it's looking at developing tools, but also how do we pay for that in the future to support the whole ecosystem for a large domain. So I think that's a really interesting movement. They are about to become an independent organization. So please look them up. And Pierre Monnier, who's leading this, is a wonderful person to talk about infrastructure, if you get the chance. Another development, which is not publisher or library driven, it's actually supported by funders in the life sciences. So international funders very concerned about really essential data sets, perhaps not being there in years to come, on genomes, et cetera. So they are looking at how can they top slice some of their funding budgets to ensure that that material will be around for years to come, right? But I'm going to talk to you about one pathway towards infrastructure, which we've been coordinating for a couple of years, and it's called SCOTS, the Global Sustainability Coalition for Open Science Services. So Cameron Nealon, who is also a real leader in this field, he said, everything we've gained by opening content and data will be under threat if we allow the enclosure of scholarly infrastructures. And we took that and his paper on principles for open scholarly infrastructure. Do read it if you'd like to read one thing, please read that. We are an open science community of organizations that promote essential open science infrastructure, and where we recommend certain services for funding for collective crowdfunding. So, of course, the essential question is, well, who is behind this initiative? Can we trust your decision? So it's made up of, Astrid is involved with LIBER, we've got the can't really read it here, haven't got my glasses on, the Canadian, no, sorry, Council of Australian University Librarians, that's cool. We've got ARL from the United States, we've got Carl from Canada, Spark Europe, of course, Eiffel, and we also have the Association of African Universities. So we are increasingly getting the global representation. And these organizations make recommendations to the community on what infrastructure needs support from the community. And for this pilot, because we've been running for about a year with the pilot, we selected DOAJ and Sherpa Romeo for the pilot. You might ask yourselves, what do you mean by infrastructure? Maybe you asked yourselves this 10 minutes ago, maybe I should have said it earlier. But how we define it is, it's that provides scientific and scholarly community with resources and services to access, share, and assess research, okay? It's unspecific to any discipline. It should be international interest and non-profit. So we represent the community, the likes of you and me, and we hope that we form a consolidated voice from being trusted partners representing large networks of particularly library and research communities. And so we identify and evaluate certain services on your behalf. And so we're hoping that, by doing the evaluation, we take out some of the hard work of asking yourselves, well, what are they doing? What benefit do they bring to which group? What do their costs look like? What are their plans in the future? We look at all of that before we make any suggestions. And we also provide some capacity building because, of course, we actually promote that the community helps fund for 2 years and one further year in the bank. So this is not sustaining for the rest of time. They need to come up with strong business models for after that time. So we're also helping build capacity there to share knowledge on business models, right, to help them sustain in the future. So these are the kinds of things that we look at when we evaluate such services. I've already mentioned some of those. The governance structure is also key. So if we as a community are also paying into that, are we represented? That we have some influence? So, the results. So, in November 2017, we launched with a funding appeal for DOAJ. And I'm thrilled to say that nobody from Hungary yet, but the community, the global community as a whole, maybe I've got that wrong, but the community as a whole, more than $1 million. We are really thrilled at that, okay? And it's largely also, we don't collect any funds, so to keep costs down, but the funds are collected then by the services. So you, as a contributor, have a relationship with the service that calls for funds. So it does mean that it's quite hard work for that service to then reach out to you to raise that fund. we're also really pleased to see, as a result of this activity, ICOLC, which is the international organization that represents library consortia, they invited us to present SCOS 2 meetings ago. And the last meeting, they also wanted to talk about investing in open infrastructure. So I'm really thrilled at that. So we really need to get this into, to change the mindset that libraries need to invest in here. Oh, am I still okay for time?
Yes.
Great, excellent. So by continent, we can see here, Europe has the biggest stake and is also contributing very much at the moment with North America in second place, and then we have Oceania, so mainly Australia there.
And here we have it by country. United States first, then Norway. Can't read it. Australia and others. But we would like to see some contributions also from these regions, however small they might be. Here there's an example of the progress. So we have a target, which is always what we start with, and then what's being committed and what's actually being paid and what still needs to be raised. So that's the latest stats on DOAJ. A key challenge has been for us is setting an appropriate pricing, a fee. We have quite a high fee at the moment because it was an experiment, so it was a pilot. And we also wanted to reach these high targets, both of them around the million mark. So we thought, well, how can we reach this target in a reasonable time so that we can open up to others, so that other services can be funded in the second round? So we had quite a significant fee, a suggested fee, but it's only a suggested one, and most of the discussions for funding these services, there's negotiation where the fee is suppressed, but we start with that. And the challenge has been for DOAJ is they've had a very low fee for years, and now we've bumped it up quite considerably to help with the sustainability. So that's been a challenge. And it's also been a challenge, so for example, for Sherpa Romeo, they've been funded purely by JISC in the UK, and now they're having to go out to potential clients, consortia, and asking them for money. And this is very new for them, so it's quite new capacity building here. They had to get whole admin system in place, etc. So there are new skills that then come with this, which is, you know, costs more time, but we help them well as far as we can. So, what are the next steps? We have issued, some of you may have seen, so we decided, due to the figures that we have achieved so far, that we will continue after the pilot, and so we issued an expression of interest to ask infrastructures around the world, if you have concerns about your sustainability in the future and your non-profit and you're of interest to the international community, please tell us something briefly, make that case of why perhaps we might think about helping you on the way towards sustainability. So we got 36 submissions from all around the world, except for South America and Asia. So Canada, US, Europe, Australia. So we're really pleased with that. And we have the job of evaluating those. We don't want to put the heavy burden of asking those services to fill in a very huge application form, providing all sorts of data, unless we see that, you know, they're appropriate, so we're kind of also trying to make it easier for them. so we will come with a short list, and that short list will be invited then to submit a larger application, and then we will come up with the names of the next services that we propose to be funded by the community. So I'm now going to end. Have I still got a few minutes?
Yes.
Excellent. So what can you do? So you can really discuss pledging for open access and open science infrastructure in your institution, right? Discussing that, looking at your own budget, what could be possible, what flexibility do you have, do you not have, how can you change that? Also, within your consortium, within your library consortium, make that also a point of discussion, and how can you do something there? And also just generally with your community, discussing it. Something quite concretely, you can also pledge money to Sherpa Romeo or DOAJ if you haven't already done so, yes? We would really like to encourage you to do that. So that's also, in a nutshell, promote investing in infrastructure. So I've got three calls to action. So just repeating what I was saying earlier, explore and invest in different business models. Yes? And so how sustainable is the infrastructure that you rely on 3 to 5 years from now? Think about that. What do you know? Yes? And if you can encourage to find out about the different business models, to contribute, to fund some of those, to establish new ones, to discuss, to find out what's behind those infrastructures, that's a really important step. Secondly, I think I've already mentioned that, raise awareness of this need in your community, and then strive to really consistently invest in open science infrastructure. Just investing in DOAJ or Sherpa Romeo now, and then you say, okay, tick box, done. No. There is so much infrastructure, so many services that really need support in the future. So we really need to think that this is a community responsibility and that we do this consistently, yes? I know it's not going to happen overnight, but please start thinking about it and see how you can plan towards that. So, join that growing community funding open access and open science infrastructure. And if you have any questions, that's how you can reach me and Spark Europe. Thank you very much.
We see questions coming in. Two new questions, if I'm not wrong, maybe three. Are there any questions in the room now for Vanessa regarding the sustainability and her views and proposals how to make an open infrastructure more sustainable?
Did I answer everything? I'm sure there will be some questions that come later. I'm around all today, and we've got Slido, haven't we?
Yes, we have Slido. And although Vanessa will not be in the panel at the end of the day, because it's not exactly the field of expertise, let's say, the practicalities of open science at an institutional level of Vanessa, she will be here in the audience, and she will be very happy to pick up with the questions addressed to the panel that come across with her field of expertise in sustainability. So please join me in giving a round of applause to Vanessa for her presentation today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.